This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with host Lisa Loving. Today's guests are from Occupy Gresham, and we're going to talk about the Chalupa Project and home foreclosures.
Tune into KBOO Wednesday, January 2nd at 6 p.m. for Treasures from the KBOO Archive, a monthly program celebrating 45 years of community engagement and activism, culture, and arts. Our first program features Vandana Shiva, recorded in 2002.
Chemical warfare is literally part of our everyday agriculture. It's not what happens with Saddam Hussein only. It's happening in all the fields. It's happening across the world. In fact, the chemicals were meant for war. The ones that are put into agriculture was a peaceful use of instruments of war.
That's Wednesday, January 2nd at 6 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Per Fogring, host of Fight the Empire. 40 years ago, a groundbreaking book was published called The Limits to Growth. MIT researchers used computer models to project a future world economy, and many of the results pointed to collapse. Thursday's guests will be author Christian Parenti. We will discuss the limits to growth and where it all leads. That's Thursday, January 3rd at 9:30 a.m. on KBOO, your radio station.
It is 8:04 a.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, people helping people in our own neighborhoods. We are with community organizers Chase Wilson and Ajamu Umi, and then later we're going to have music promoter and community organizer Jesse Spomberg. He's going to talk about his Chalupa project. We're hoping people will be tuning in this morning and figuring out how to plug in to these efforts that people are doing, many of them coming out of the Occupy movement. So, Chase, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Ajamu, are you there?
I am.
Yay! Thanks for being here. So I want to go with Ajamu first, because I know that you have been coordinating a number of home defense projects around trying to keep people from losing their homes in home foreclosure. Can you give us an update on the work that you've been doing and what are the hot spots right now and places people can plug in?
Oh, thank you, Lisa. Well, first, it's certainly not just me. I mean, there are a broad collection of people here in the Portland area that are have been sacrificing quite a bit to help community members defend their houses. And right now, there are actually four or five houses here in Portland where we are actually helping the residents of those homes defend their homes. These are people who are facing illegal foreclosures, and in one case with Alicia Jackson, it's a really scandalous case with the city of Portland where they refuse to turn her water on and are trying to enforce this fraudulent trespass agreement against her because there's no water on in her house, although they're the ones who refuse to turn it on. So we're doing that, and we're also helping coordinate a citywide, what we call a community agreement movement, which is designed to raise the consciousness of people around the question of having decent housing for everyone, and that everybody has a right to have somewhere to live, and that we want no empty houses and no more evictions.
All right. The community agreement movement is really interesting. I'd like to talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. So let's go with Chase Wilson. Now, Chase, you're doing stuff. You're regional now. Your knowledge is even more spread out. Talk about what you've been working with and let people know how we can plug in.
Thanks. So I've been working with specifically a family in East County near Gresham, the Martins, and they were given an illegal eviction notice by their rental agency and were intimidated, and so they sort of reached out, and we've been working with them to try to prolong that process and try to keep them in their home as long as possible. And more broadly, obviously, as Ajamu said, this is a wider movement with many people involved, and the ideals that come with that are that humans shouldn't be houseless. Humans need a place to live, to survive, and that there are houseless people in our community is unacceptable.
And Chase and Ajamu, there is a place where people can go and plug in. I want to say with their cell phones and be part of what I want to say. It's like an urgent action thing. Right. Can you guys how do people participate with that? Chase, you want to take that one, Chase, or Ajamu?
Sure.
Okay, go ahead, Chase.
So there are two rapid response networks at this time. The one that is more established is citywide, and the way that people can plug into that is by texting PLOC open dash RRN to the number 23559.
23559. We're going to give this information out a few times, listeners.
And that's all one word. Mm-hmm. And then the one in East County, in Gresham, is one that's actually being organized specifically around the Martin family at this time. And that's Gresham, RRN. So it's the @ GRESHAMRRN. And you can join that rapid response network by texting that word to 23559, and that's completely free other than your normal cell phone charges.
Listeners, are you organizing in your neighborhoods? Listeners, have you been missing the Occupy and wishing that there was a little more drama in downtown Portland? But what are you actually doing in your neighborhood? We would love if people could give us a call and let us know what you're doing. And you know, keep in mind, we're hoping that Jesse Sponberg will call back later. Jesse Sponberg's been doing this wacky thing with Chalupa coupons, right? So I gather they give them away at the Blazers games. So he basically texts and goes on social media and says to people, hey, meet me at the Blazers games. They go to the end of the Blazers game with big signs that say, donate your Chalupa coupons. They get those coupons, they just turn right around and go to downtown Portland and give them away to people who are hungry. It's like so simple, so basic. If you are out there listening and you have a wacky idea like that, we would love to hear your idea. And if you're already doing something, please let us know, because today's a day for people to plug in. It's the beginning of the year. Everybody wants to do something. And the number to call, of course, 503-231-8187. With your idea for community organizing or what you're already doing that people can help with. Ajamu, I wanted to ask you something about this. It's about how the banking system is still dealing with the foreclosures. I mean, you are the guy with your fingers on the pulse of exactly how it is that these banking institutions work or don't work in terms of finagling people's properties away. Ajamu, can you talk to us a little bit about what is it? What are these tools in the banking industry that are separating people from their homes this way?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. This is a major problem in terms of getting people to understand what's really going on is just the separation of knowledge about what the banking industry is really all about. The reality right now is that with the housing market the way it is, banks are, people are wondering, like, why are the banks taking so long to foreclose on people? And the reason for that is they're holding on to the foreclosures because they don't want to, if they release all of these empty houses, that'll obviously impact the housing market value. So they're doing that, and then what's going on is they're in the process of lobbying to create more legislation that's favorable to them. Through their massive lobbying effort that they have in place throughout Congress, so that they can begin to have conditions more favorable for them to reclaim these houses as quickly as possible. So, you know, it's really, if you're facing foreclosure, you're having problems with a bank or bank-owned house that you're renting or whatever the situation is, you're really at a disadvantage if you're looking at it from the standpoint of working with them and hoping that, you know, you get something either through the court system or through some sort of legal process that you're involved in that's going to benefit you. Because what we found in the dozens of court cases that we've been involved in is that the best that you're going to get by relying solely on that approach is, you know, it may buy you some time, but that's about it. At the end result is going to be that you're going to be at a disadvantage and you're probably going to be houseless.
And here's the other thing. I could have sworn that the Oregon State Legislature passed a quote-unquote law around banking institutions having to mediate with their customers that they're having disputes with, but that law had no teeth, right? So they sort of, I almost used a term that I was going to have to like erase part of this audio here on the radio. But so the Oregon State Legislature did something, but it's completely meaningless.
Yeah, that's a great example. You know, what I'm talking about is in July of 2012, this Oregon law was passed that supposedly required banks to sit down with you if you were having difficulty making your payments and mediate a solution with you. The law didn't require the banks to come up with a solution with you. It just said that they had to schedule a meeting with you and sit down with you to do it. To this point, there have been hundreds of requests from consumers to banks to have these meetings with them, and the banks aren't even having the meetings, not mm-hmm. to mention sitting down and, you know, us being able to sit here 6 months later and say, well, yeah, they've 20% of the cases, they've come up with solutions. No, they haven't even, they're not even meeting with people. Mm-hmm. So this is an example of what I'm saying in that, you know, it's like an old saying Malcolm X said 50 years ago, when you're sitting at the table with someone and they have food and you don't, you're not a diner, you're just sitting at the table. And that's what you are as a consumer if you're relying on the banks to work with you in a situation where you have financial trouble making your payments. You're really in a powerless position.
It makes me wonder who's supposed to regulate it.
Well, that's why, and I think, you know, Chase would, I'm surely agree, we see it as it's about organizing a movement of people, and that's where our power really comes from. Mm-hmm. It comes from us getting together as communities and saying, no more of this, you know, we're going to organize and we're going to take back our communities. I think that's where any type of regulation that's going to exist is going to come from.
Here, I just to belabor this point, one more minute. We do have a caller, and I know that Chase wants to respond. Now, I'm talking about the banking industry, but I've seen some of the reports that you have put out, Adamu, and your organizing crew, regarding how some of these folks landed where they did. And when I'm talking about the banking industry, actually, I'm not even talking about a bank. I'm talking about some of these so-called businesses have evolved, and all they do is pass paper and get money to stick to them. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, that's the way the process works. I mean, these developers, the whole industry, the developers, the realtors, the these hard money lending finance companies. I mean, they're
the finance companies. People, they get me. Yeah,
exactly. They like liquidators who, you know, they hold the title right now on Miss Annette Steele's property, one of the houses we're helping defend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, places like this, you know, their whole point of business is to rely and lay in wait for people to experience misery so that they can take advantage of it. Their whole profitability margin is based on people suffering and being able to take advantage of it, and that's how that entire industry works.
The whole profit margin really maxes out in default. It's like when you're miserable, that's where the most cash exists. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. Today, people helping people in our own neighborhoods. We're live on the phone with community organizer Adamu Umi, and we also are live in the studio with Chase Wilson, people who have emerged through the Occupy movement, the Occupy moment, and trying to actually you know, we can't probably, I don't know if we can save the world, but we can save individual people's worlds, and that's a start. And we do have a caller. Let's go to the phone line. Joanne, what's going on?
Lisa, I think I still love you. You want to talk about misery? Well, I don't like living it. I mean, I'm glad people are helping middle-class people, and probably after what I'm saying or said in the past, I guess I'm going to have drones pointed at my apartment. But, people of America, where the hell is the support and help for people that are suffering abuse and harassment in public housing?
Public housing. All right. You know what? I'm so glad Joanne called and put that out there. The public housing piece is huge. And I feel like flagging it, and Chase is nodding. He's like, no, I can't go there. I had so many people who live in public housing in 2013 calling me up at my job at the newspaper. And it's everybody's complete fear that if they complain or agitate in any way in their public housing apartment or house or whatever it is, that they will just get kicked out. And I would love to see the movement around reforming public housing. I know that there were some Occupy people that were helping agitate around there. And so I know that there's people that are out there doing it. But it's a tough one because people literally are afraid that they're going to be thrown right out on the street. And when we're talking about public housing, we're talking about some of the most vulnerable people already, especially people with disabilities, disabilities that keep them from working. Huge, huge issue. And do we have another caller on the phone?
Sean.
We have Sean on the phone. Sean, what do you think?
Hey, good morning.
Hello.
I don't want to engage in any kind of like juvenile macho posturing, but one of my favorite sayings is never confuse activity with accomplishment. And I think theoretically, we really have to address what Christian Parenti was talking about in the Democracy Now! Segment. He was saying, we need to focus on seizing state power. It's not enough to engage in what I call quagmire activism. We have to seriously talk about seizing state power, and the only political party that seems to be addressing that is the Revolutionary Communist Party. So while I applaud people's well-intentioned efforts, right now the Revolutionary Communist Party needs funding to keep its newspaper revolution going.
Sean, no. You're throwing down the Revolutionary Communist Party. You're making me annoyed, and I love you. You're great. I'm so glad you called. I don't want to be negative.
This society is flying apart at the seams.
Uh-huh.
The social fabric has been utterly torn apart. The gulf between the haves and the have-nots is exploding.
So we should give our money to the RCP newspaper, really?
It's not a time to talk about our standard activism. It's a time to be stockpiling assault rifles.
Okay. I'm not going there. I think that's wrong. Sure. I'm just putting it out.
Well, that's very nice, but those are the facts.
All right, Sean, you know what?
Sean, could I respond to you?
Yeah, thanks. Sean, people are already stockpiling the guns. Go ahead, Chase.
I think on the subject of seizing state power, you know, there's not obviously through the electoral system, that's one way that people seem to think is a good tactic. I think that's not a winning tactic if we're actually looking to seize power and to actually have empowerment in communities, in people. I think that quagmire activism is not really a good way to describe what's going on in Portland in terms of the housing movement, where we're seeing people actually standing up and actually taking a physical stand against authority that would have you out on the street, that works in favor of the banks, that works on behalf of the banks. And so, establishing community agreements that we say, in our community, we will not have people kicked out of their homes by police. I think that is a much more real seizure of state power than electing anyone, really.
Well, yeah, actually, I just want to put this out, and actually, I'm crabby about Sean, but I'm glad he called because those were fascinating and important points to be made. I'm just going to put this out, though. When I hear people talk about stockpiling guns because we need to arm ourselves against the government, okay, who are you going to shoot? What does that look like, right?
Well, so, can I say something to that real quick?
Okay, is this Ajamu?
Yes.
Right on. Okay.
You mentioned before public housing. You know, I grew up in inner city housing projects, and I, as a young man, participated in gang activity. So, it's amusing to me when people talk about stockpiling weapons, in some romantic sense, when they haven't, most of the time, they haven't had any experience being shot at or shooting at someone, and from my practical life experiences, I learned about revolutionary organizing. And revolutionary organizing is all about raising the consciousness of the people in society, because that's how you get uncompromising change, which is what revolution is by people's consciousness forcing that change. It's not through a small group of people doing some Arnold Schwarzenegger grabbing guns and taking power like a movie script. It's
which people are doing, by the way. People are doing that.
Exactly. That's what this is about. It's about using these things like the Martin family and Alicia Jackson and Darren and Patricia and the Saratex and these people who are in this fight, and using that as a way to raise people's consciousness so that people can begin to understand that we can have the type of society that places people's needs over money. And that's what we're doing. So anybody that says that that's useless activism, then that's telling me they're not out there, they're looking at TV, or they're engaged in a lot of coffee shop discussions, but they're really not going door to door working with people, really working to create revolutionary change.
My housemate's been camping out in Alicia Jackson's yard every week, every other week, and she's had a head cold, and she's gone out there anyway. And when you go out there and you look at the face of the people who are literally fighting for their house, it changes you, does something to you. And I do not want to encourage people to stockpile weapons, because guess what happens when you do that? If you're white, not the same thing as if you're black. Putting that out, I'm just going to say that. And also, I do also want to say, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, you do not want to miss what's coming up at 9. Political Perspectives, Paul Rowland hosts an in-depth look at the Indigenous uprising in Canada under the name Idle No More, with guests documentary filmmaker and Beaver Lake Cree Myron Lehman live in the studio, and other Idle No More activists on the phone from Canada. That's going to be awesome. And you definitely want to stay tuned for that. We have a couple callers. Let's go to the phone line. We have Brian on the phone. Brian.
Yeah, good morning.
We're getting contentious, Brian. We're getting contentious.
We'll
go
get
ahead.
Contentious.
All right.
I'm going to get contentious here.
Uh-oh.
I think that, first of all, the caller who suggested stockpiling weapons, and I don't even want to continue that conversation. But, I mean, that is playing into the right-wing, fascist, whatever, the idiot's hands. I mean, they would love to have, they would love to burst into a house and find a stockpile of weapons, and then they would have an excuse to burst into everybody else's house. So that is just completely insane. But let me throw something out on the other side of that, please. And I've mentioned this on other radio shows, I think. But why don't we do this? Since we're a society of free market, and we want the best, most efficient society that we possibly can, why don't we contract out? And I've suggested this with the schools, but why don't we contract our society out to Europe, like Northern Europe, who is actually, they're actually running social democracies on a proper level, and, you know, I mean, there is a lot less corruption, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I mean, there is a lot more fairness, and people in public housing, and people are not begging for their jobs and begging for a place to live.
Except in Spain.
Living under bridges.
Actually, in Spain. So thanks for calling, Brian. You're spinning out a whole bunch of things, and I just want to start to address some of that stuff. Brian's saying outsource our social model to Europe, which I think that we do have a few things that we could learn from Europe. And I just want to, I used to live in Europe, so that's the only reason I want to address that a little bit. You know, in some of the countries, I'm not going to say Spain, though. In the Netherlands, I feel like in France, I'm not so sure about England. In some of these countries, people decided that they do not want to have a prison industrial complex like the United States has. So they have basically thrown all their resources into education, housing, stuff like that. Now, it's not perfect. And so we used to live in Amsterdam, where people, you know, there's theoretically there's public housing, but you would have to, people we knew had to wait 12 years. To get a place to live. And that's why there was such a big squatters movement. By the way, in Amsterdam, in the Netherlands, the squatting movement has been all but crushed out, all but stamped out. And it's an interesting thing for us to look at what's going on in countries like the Netherlands as we look at what's going on here. Because in the Netherlands, too, starting about 10 years ago, they started to have these crazy shootings. And so in Europe, people are worried that U.S. culture, you know, everybody likes Elvis. Everybody likes, you know, hip-hop. People like music. They like culture. But they don't want our political values. Unfortunately, our political values did sort of infect the Netherlands specifically and a few other places. But I think that where Brian's really got his fingers on the pulse is people who got together and said, we do not want a prison industrial complex. And that's why we're not going to start a drug war. But I think an interesting thing also to bring up, and then I'm not going to talk all day, is that, Jason's giggling, is that I really, truly, honestly do believe that there's something about the National Rifle Association, and I'm going to say it, that does have its roots in the Ku Klux Klan. There's something about our gun culture that has its roots in the transatlantic slave trade. And if you want to compare and contrast the United States to European countries, which were also involved in the transatlantic slave trade, by the way, again, we were just talking about the Netherlands. I used to live there. You know, they didn't bring the enslaved people to the Netherlands. So they're, you know, the racial politics is different. Their colonialism in Suriname and Indonesia now created something more like a multiracial society there. But I think that as we're looking at what's wrong in the United States, we're looking at some of these institutions, the racism, the guns, the banks. Yes, the banks too, massively impacted by the transatlantic slave trade. I would even go so far as to say their early incarnations on these shores were probably shaped by the transatlantic slave trade. And we just saw HBC Bank popped for laundering money, whatever. Anyway, so just look at it comparing and contrasting, and I've talked enough. We've got a couple people on the phone. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're actually talking about people helping people in our own neighborhoods. And Sean came out there. He put the radical stuff on the table, which is kind of juicy, actually. So let's go back to the phone lines. We have Michael on the phone. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I want to go back to that guy that was talking about the banks. I think that a lot of what he said is not really accurate. I dealt in foreclosures quite extensively, and one thing about it is banks are not in the business of selling houses, so they don't really want houses back. They're in the business of selling money. There's a long process before the bank takes your home. I mean, they send out notices 120 days before they actually do anything. And then you got redemptionary periods and everything else. I think the reason banks really take people's homes back is they send out financial statements, and they want to know how you got in trouble, what does your finances look like now? And if it looks like you can actually pay your bills, then they'll work out something with you. So I just wanted to put that out there because that, just say the banks are after your home, that's bunk. They're not in the housing business. They're in the money business.
Okay.
Can I clarify?
Yeah. Thank you so much. And, Michael, I want to thank you for calling. And I also want to encourage Ajamu to talk a little bit about what happened to that family on Alameda Ridge. Go ahead, Ajamu.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the caller heard, but I don't think he heard too much about what I said, because what I just want to reiterate, what I said is that the banks are, when people are in foreclosure, their houses are seized. And we're talking about people who are going through financial difficulty, usually because their health issues, something has happened. And all of the cases that we're working with, people have had tremendous turmoil. They've lost child family members.
Yeah.
They encountered terminal illnesses. Usually it's something of that nature that causes them to go into financial trouble. And so they fall behind in payments. And what has happened, and I know this because I'm working with, I don't know what the caller's experience is working with people, but I've worked with these people, and then I have a long history as a recovering banker as well.
Yeah.
And so I can tell you that what happens is that these people are calling the banks, and they're trying to mediate solutions, and they're getting told all kinds of crazy things like, don't make your payments because you have to be behind in order to qualify for, you know, the assistance programs that are available.
Which is why I asked you about just the basic regulation, because it seems like there's so much wrongdoing, but go ahead.
No, well, people are following this advice because they're thinking that they're getting, you know, advice that's in their interest, and then they're falling behind. And, you know, people have $1,000, $1,500 payments. Once they get one behind, two behind, it's difficult for most people, especially when they're experiencing financial difficulty, to make that up. So they're falling farther and farther behind, and then that's where the foreclosure process happens. So there's no question. I mean, it's a fact. The banks have these houses. They've been foreclosed on, whatever the reason. We talk all day about the reasons for it. The caller or anyone else can't deny that banks have these houses. There's a glut of foreclosed houses. Several of the banking industries and industry analysts are saying that about 5% of homeowners in the country right now are at least two payments behind. So, you know, this is not something I'm making up. I mean, this is clear information out there for anyone who wants to see it. So that's where the problem comes from. They have the houses. I don't know what the caller meant, but there's no question about, you know, they have the foreclosed houses, and these are the reasons why people are falling behind.
The other piece of that is, like I said earlier, and I want to thank Michael for calling, because it is the question to ask. You know, the banks are not, and I've heard that discussion before, the banks are not in the housing industry. Michael, here's the thing that burns my toast, and we touched on it a little bit. All of these liquidators, all of these debt corporations, they're all part of the banking industry. So your Wells Fargo, you know, they maybe don't want to own your house, and if they do repossess it, they're not going to maintain it, which is another issue, by the way. But these there's a whole industry of, I'm just going to say, BS debt pusher back and forthers, and that's where the real issue is. What is the relationship of the banks to these different debt organizations? And when you're looking at, and Ajamu brought up with Annette Steele, what has happened with the debt on her house? That lady has lived in the Sabin neighborhood for decades, and the debt was resold like 14 times. And so who really holds the title of it, Michael, is part of the issue. Like, this industry has been so poorly regulated. The fraud has been so pathetic, and the federal government has done zip just to do basic consumer protections that, you know, it may not be about Bank of America exactly per se, but there's a whole shell, there's a whole network of these other corporations that make money from passing the debt around. And that's really part of what made the economy collapse. Were you going to say something, Chase?
Well, I was actually going to ask that Ajamu speak on the process of gentrification, which is more broadly like what this is, what happens here.
And I just want to say, we are live with Chase Wilson and Ajamu Umi, community organizers, and I'm rooting around for Jesse Spomberg's phone number, because I think maybe I'm supposed to call him. No, you go, you guys talk. No, you were just saying, Chase, restate your question.
Oh, I was going to ask Ajamu about or if he would feel comfortable speaking on the process of gentrification, because I know that's Michael was asking why would the banks want to, you know, acquire this house, and as you pointed out, Lisa, there's a lot of different players involved, basically passing papers around, and but there's a lot the larger processes involved here.
Yeah, the gentrification piece.
I mean, and that's Chase brings up a very important aspect of what's happening. I mean, and Lisa mentioned, you know, all of these agencies, these subprime companies, these companies that have been set up specifically to basically poach homes. And this is what's happening. Like, you have communities like Northeast Portland, and these communities exist all over the country and all over the world. I mean, there are even, believe it or not, communities in Central Africa and the Congo where you have citizens of Eastern Europe who are coming in and buying a property. And so this is a process that's happening. But what it is that we mentioned that people go through difficult financial periods in their lives where they begin to fall behind on their payments and begin to lose their houses. And you have these companies like Liquidators and Home Builders Incorporated.
And we've never even heard the names of these.
Fox Capital. I mean, you look up these companies. What they do is they go in these neighborhoods and they look for these houses. They look for what they call distressed properties. They look for people who are struggling to make payments. And then they push hard for the foreclosure. They push hard for the foreclosure, and they offer to buy the houses, and they do this type of thing. And so this is the way that, you know, in many instances, the process is expedited, and people begin to lose their houses. And what's happening is that people who have higher income placement, which are particularly young urban white professionals, they come in and they move into the neighborhoods, and this is what you can see happening in Northeast Portland. And the traditional residents, people of African descent who are facing this financial difficulty are pushed out and don't have the resources to fight for their houses. And, you know, we're seeing, I mean, people will be shocked with the kind of things that we're seeing. We're seeing forged loan documents. Mm-hmm. For people, you know, where bank employees are forging signatures,
auto-signing them with machines and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, why do people think that Wells Fargo, not that it means anything, because I don't think it does, but why do people think that the federal government, the Justice Department, is right now engaged in a class-action lawsuit against Wells Fargo? Why do people think that kind of thing is happening? Because this type of fraudulent activity is really the consistent process that's going on in the country. So, I don't think people really understand. I think people have this concept that, oh, you know, people are just, they don't want to make their payments. You know, it's like, because you're miserable, you think everybody else should be miserable. So, I get this all the time. I work two or three jobs and I make my payments. Well, you shouldn't have to work two or three jobs to have somewhere to live. So what we're talking about is that everybody works hard. You know, people say it all the time. Well, I work hard. Like, you're the only one that works hard. Everybody works hard. You know, well, we're not talking about that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about people who are being defrauded and misguided into having their property stolen from them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people understand that.
Right.
You know, and if they want to come out with me and go and talk to people and review their loan documents, I encourage you to do that so that you can really understand what's happening and stop getting your information from CNN and CIA Network.
Or the Oregonian, God bless their hearts. You know, I see some reporting in the Oregonian that I feel like is not really complete and is not really digging into the right directions. Chase and I were talking about that before this show. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live with Chase Wilson and Ajamu Umi, community organizers. We're looking at things people are doing in our own neighborhoods to try to improve our neighborhoods. And we do have another person on the phone. I see the magical engineering pixie. He's got a furrowed brow. He's pressing buttons. We'll cut him loose for a second and go back over some of the information about how people can get involved. Now, the Martin family in East County now, they're going to court on Monday. Is that right?
That's right, the 7th.
So do you want people to come to court and support them?
That would be fantastic. The Martin family, to explain a little bit about their situation, I know we mentioned it earlier.
Renters.
They are a family who is renting a place out off Powell and 170th Southeast. And back in April, the homeowners actually stopped paying their mortgage. And so they were you know, forced to look for a new house, and because of extenuating circumstances, Leah Martin has a forced eviction on her record, and so because of this sort of blemish on her record, it's been very hard for them to find a new place. And so right now, they were given an eviction notice on November 17th, which is, you know, not enough time. They were given eviction notice for December 13th. So we, you know, made a big ruckus about that. I said, this is not okay. The rental agency pushed it out to December 18th. And we had a showing of community support on that day, and now they're going to court on the 7th, which is Monday, and it's at 9:15 a.m. in Multnomah County Courthouse, which is on Southwest 4th near City Hall and Chapman and Lounsdale Square. So we're really trying to look at the Martin situation and say, look, this is not isolated. This is something that's happening all over the place, and it's not acceptable to have a family with three kids and their 86-year-old grandmother who's bedridden to be out on the streets. Like, that's not okay. So if people want to come out and support that, that's fantastic. I know that, you know, showing community support for this family is really empowering.
And so part of what's happening, you know, the Occupy movement, it kind of broke into 10,000 tiny time tablets, and those time tablets are going out and they're blanketing different sick places in our society. I'm just putting that out. And we're trying to catch up with Jesse Sponberg, who's doing the Chalupa Project, which I still think is really awesome. It's early in the morning, and we're not hooking up with him right now. But, you know, just the whole idea of, with Jesse Sponberg, it's like looking at how people just left those Chalupa coupons on the ground. They turned into garbage. He gets a bunch of people to go out there and collect them and actually give them to people who are hungry. That's an amazing thing to do. Just want to put these ideas like that out there. Even though I can feel Sean's frustration, Sean, who was talking about the Revolutionary Communist Party, which is, I'm just crabby about the RCP. I'm crabby about it, okay? You know, and God bless anyone that wants to do the right thing. Really want to encourage people to get out of your house and go work with people to do something concrete. And I know that in the Seattle area, some of our radical political friends have done a lot more stuff up there. Seattle, more people, more wild stuff going on. Oh, and we just got Jesse on the phone. Let's see if we can get him on the line. Jesse, you there?
Yeah.
Hey, good morning, Jesse Sponberg.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. We're good. Now, Jesse, we have been talking a lot about people organizing against home foreclosures, but we bragged a little bit, too, about the Chalupa Project. Talk about it. What is it? How'd you start it? What happens with it?
Okay. Well, before I get started, I just want to thank the hard work of everybody who's working on those foreclosure defenses. That is some real noble work right there. So mm-hmm. My hat's off to everybody organizing that, everybody standing up for their rights, and everybody who's pulling shifts there, because that is not the easiest job.
No. But go ahead, Chalupa Project.
Okay, so the Chalupa mission is a real simple, man, I wish every problem in the world was this easy. So we use the corporate Taco Bell, which is not very nutritious food, but so that's a problem. But the real problem is hunger in the streets. On any given night, we have about 2,000 people sleeping on the streets of Portland, Oregon. So last year, I was watching a Trailblazer game, and they gave away free Chalupas to everybody. And I thought to myself, wow, what if we could fill the Rose Garden with hungry people? And then, of course, that wouldn't work. So I thought, well, what if we just did the hard work ourselves?
And watch the game.
Whenever the Trailblazers score 100 points, everybody who leaves the Rose Garden is giving a free, highly transferable Chalupa coupon. That entitles the customer to a free Chalupa, which I don't know if you know about Chalupas. It's like a taco, but it comes in a soft flatbread. It's meat, sour cream, tomatoes, two kinds of shredded cheese. So it does hit all four of the food groups. Sorry if I'm talking in circles.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. We're with you.
Okay, so what we do is we stand outside the Rose Garden with big signs that say, donate your Chalupa to local outreach. And then what we do is on any given night, We raise, I don't know, between 500 and 1,000 chalupas. And then we go and we give them to Impact. No, who do we give those to? Sorry, I guess I just woke up.
Janice, Yellow Brick Road.
Janice Youth Project. Oh, we give those to Janice Youth for the Yellow Brick Road Project. And what the Yellow Brick Road Project does is it does outreach to teens who are sleeping on the streets. So what they do is they go and they find the kids wherever they're sleeping at, and they make sure that they're safe, that they're not threatened, they have no medical needs. And then once they find all that out, you know, they sign off on the kid, sign their checklist, and give them a couple free Chalupa coupons. So here's the beauty, though, of the Chalupa program, and this is what I didn't understand in the beginning, is that almost harder than finding something to eat downtown is finding a safe and hygienic place to use the restroom. Most businesses insist that you're a customer down there, and so oftentimes these kids end up going in unsafe and unsanitary conditions. So now when you have that Chalupa coupon, suddenly you're a customer of Taco Bell, and that entitles you to full use of their restroom facilities. So that means that not only are we feeding these kids, but we're giving them a safe, warm, dry place to use the bathroom, wash your hands, wash your face even. I mean, who cares? It's Taco Bell. Taco Bell isn't, you know, they're not losing any money. And this is a really good way for Taco Bell to give back without them even knowing about it.
It's interesting, too, because if you want to take that another step, my brother used to be a public defender, and more than half of his customers were people arrested for public urination. So this issue of where you can go to the bathroom if you're houseless is, it becomes a law enforcement issue, actually. So that's completely juicy. We have a caller on the line. Should we go to that caller? Matt. Hey, Matt. Oh, really? Well, let's hold on to Jesse. Let's hold on to Jesse a few more minutes and say, Jesse, how can we support what you do? How do we hook up with you?
Okay. There's a couple ways. First of all, the easiest way is just to spread the word. This is a wonderful program, but I still need help getting the word out. Second, you could actually help us, which would mean going, meeting me at the Rose Garden around like 9:30 on a home game night.
When they're doing good.
It only takes 15 minutes, and each person that comes and volunteers their time is worth about 170 coupons per time. Mm. The other way you could do it is you could actually join our text group, which would mean text the at symbol and then donate your chalupas to 23559, and that will put you in the text group.
Give me the number one more time. Did you say 23559?
Yes, ma'am.
23559. Go ahead. Go.
Okay, so it's at donate your chalupas. Put the S at the end. It's not chalupa, it's chalupas. And if you text that, you will join our Selly group, and I'll give you updates. I'll tell you early in the day if I think we're going to get 100, then I'll keep your score updated. And that's about it. Just spread the word, donate your chalupas. Tell all your friends that go to Blazer games. Tell friends you have that live in other cities. That's the next step, is to move this program to other cities that also do, you know, NBA cities. Mm. So Phoenix, L.A., New York, Philadelphia. Not only do all those cities have NBA teams, but all those cities also have large houseless populations. So, I don't know. That's about it.
All right, man. Hey, Jesse Sponberg, thank you so much for calling. Really appreciate you being on the show. And we're going to try to... The show is always early in the morning. It's never going to get any easier. So anyway, thanks again, though. Thanks for waking up and being with us.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
I'm sorry, I was hard to get a hold of.
All right, no problem. Thanks a lot.
Happy New Year, Portland. I love you.
Happy New Year to you, too. Let's go and see if we could chat with Matt for a minute. We got Matt on the line. Matt's been waiting pretty patiently. Matt, are you there?
I'm here. It's just as fun to listen on the phone as it is on the radio.
Oh, really? Except that crick in your neck thing. Matt, what's on your mind? What's going on with you?
I've got a kind of a self-serving question, but I think it still falls within the umbrella of the discussion here. You know, one of the more dramatic, I suppose, coordinated efforts going alongside the Occupy movement was seemed to be, you know, everybody pulling their money out of big banks and trying to bring them to local institutions.
Mm-hmm.
With the housing, in my wife and I, our case, we've been in our house 5 years, and I'm looking to try to refinance. And so the first thing that I did is start calling around all of the big, you know, local credit unions, anybody who, you know, could do a home refi, and trying to say, well, you know, so part of what I'm looking for is somebody who's going to keep my mortgage local, which I'm finding doesn't really exist. None of them say that they can guarantee that. You know,
I've never even heard of that thought. Keeping your mortgage local. Wow. Wow. Talk more about that. What does that mean?
Part of the whole idea that I would like to refinance, you know, with a local banking institution who's gonna, you know, if things go south, you know, in any worst case scenario, you know, and there before the grace of God go I, that I'm going to be dealing with, you know, at least somebody where I can go walk up and knock on a door, and I know that, you know, there's a decision maker somewhere in this zip code, you know, not Faceless Chase Manhattan.
We're saying like the Albina Community Bank. I know they make mortgage loans. You're saying look at these local institutions.
That's what I think. Upon scratching into that, pretty much all of them are when it comes to mortgages or, you know, just helping people buy houses or refinance their houses, that ultimately they can't guarantee that your mortgage isn't going to end up with Chase again. Anyway.
Because they don't even know who they're selling that debt to.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole thing. It's the debt sales thing, which Michael, who called earlier, he wasn't really hip with that. He was stuck on the bank. But it's all about how they sell the debt, really.
Sure, yeah.
They don't even know what's going.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm pretty, you know, relatively ignorant to the, you know, to the nuances of the process. I'm just sort of along for the ride. So as I'm trying to call around and say, you know, as long as I'm throwing around big amounts of money like this, I'd like to put my conscience behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really seem like it's anything that actually exists. And I suppose, I mean, a lot of that has to do with just the way the rules are written. But I guess I was going to throw out to, I mean, obviously you guys are a little more in the loop. So I was wondering if you're aware of anybody, you know, locally that was trying to, you know, cater to that, you know, to all us conscious shoppers out there, you know, that are buying houses or refinancing houses, or, you know, I mean, this is the biggest loan that I'll ever deal with in my life.
Yeah.
I hate that Chase has it.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt.
I can speak to that.
Thanks for calling, Matt.
Thank you much.
Yeah, Ajamu, I mean, I'd never even thought of it that way, keeping your mortgage loan local. I've never heard that phrase.
Yeah, you know, and for the credit unions, because it sounds like what he's talking about, you know, the movement to move money, your money
right.
from big banks to credit unions, it's going to be difficult holistically for most credit unions to do what he's talking about. Technically, it can be done, but the way it's done is that, you know, they hire servicing companies that may not necessarily be local, but they retain the these companies actually process the work with the loan. They process the payments. They handle the calculations, the interest calculations. They send out notices. They do all these. But your actual mortgage stays with the institution that you initiated it with. That's the only way that can happen. Where, you know, technically your loan is still local, although it's not actually physically handled local. It could be handled overseas somewhere, actually.
Right.
But that's the only way it can do it, because what's happening is that, you know, these credit unions who have much smaller asset bases, you know, if a credit union is a $100 million credit union, as you can imagine, they're only going to be able to purchase so many mortgage loans. So that's why they have to sell them, so they don't use up their asset base, you know, lending out money. So that's just how the process works, and there isn't really a way around that, especially for smaller financial institutions.
Right. And I do also want to say that the Magical Engineering Pixie ran in here with a candy bar wrapper, and it was written on it, said, the technical term, ask for an in-house loan. That's what the Magical Engineering Pixie says. He has secret knowledge. I don't know how he does it. And on this subject, too, I just want to put this out, too. One of the things that interests me the most is the Rolling Jubilee website, which came from a strike debt, the organization out of Occupy. One of the things that interests me the most about the efforts that people are making in the wake of the big breakup of the Occupy camps is how to reform the financial industry, how to reform the banking industry. But so many of us have spent our whole lives like thinking that we were above it and we didn't agree with it and we didn't like it. So we didn't learn how it worked. Do you understand what I'm saying? So Ajamu, are you familiar with the Rolling Jubilee effort by Strike Debt?
Yeah, I mean, I have heard quite a bit about it. I think it's a great project. I mean, anything that's designed to, again, bring consciousness to people, because I think that's the main thing that is lacking in this movement, in this society. So anything that's designed to, you know, light fire with people and help people understand what's going on and how to get involved and change it is definitely a good thing in my book.
All right. And, you know, we're starting to run out of show. I'm ready to just go, Chase, what were you going to say? And then let's just go through all the information people need to plug in.
Okay. Well, obviously, to get more information about what's going on locally, weareoregon.org is probably the best source of information for that. Also, if you look up Blazing Arrow organization, that is a really solid organization that's doing work around housing with We Are Oregon. And, you know, the most direct way to get involved is to join the Rapid Response Network, and that's as easy as sending a text message. And so to do that, again, we can say you text the at symbol PLOC dash open RRN. So that's PLOC dash open RRN. And that's all one word. You text that in the body of the text message and send that to 23559. So with that, you'll get very infrequent. So don't worry about it blowing up your cell phone.
No, you hardly ever get anything. Right. And it's actually really exciting when it does come.
Yeah,
and it's basically saying, look, there's something going on right here. We're looking at it. Think about coming, but we're not telling people to come. And then maybe an hour later, it'll say, everybody, we need you to come to this certain place.
Yeah.
It's very immediate. And anyway, so also the Gresham Rapid Response Network.
Right. The Gresham is for East County. And specifically the Martin family, who is going through this process and facing intimidation by their rental agency, by the court system. And so the Rapid Response Network for that is the at symbol Gresham. That's GRESHAMRRN. And again, with the same thing, you can text that to 23559. And that's probably the most immediate way to get plugged in around here. Ajamu, would you have any thing to add to that?
Yeah, Ajamu. Yeah. So how do we support what you're doing with the Steels, with Alicia Jackson, and anybody else?
Well, it's all the same. So Chase, the information Chase gave is exactly the right information. The only thing that I would add is that Alicia Jackson's house in Northeast Portland, which is really like kind of the place where fire was breathed into all of this, back with all the hundreds of people who helped move her back in her house on May 1st of last year. She's still defending her house. I mean, the police could literally come as I'm talking to you now and attempt to evict her. So if people are interested in specifically continuing to support that symbolic effort to fight back, the way to do that, the best way to do that is, as Chase said, you can go to the weareoregon.org site, or specifically you can go to Facebook if you have Facebook or you know someone who has it, and just go to the page, which is Fight the Power, Defend Alicia's House, and there are pretty much daily updates there as to what shifts are needed to help defend her house. And so, you know, indicate what you want to do, and we'll contact you, give you an orientation, and help you get acclimated to becoming a home defender.
Also, for people that want to participate with Jesse Sponberg in the Chalupa Project, that's at Donate Your Chalupas. You're texting that to 23559. We'll try to put this information on the website and keep it by the front desk. Hey, That's it for our show. Thank you for all the people who called. Special thanks to our guests, Chase Wilson, Ajamu Umi, and Jesse Spomberg. Links, we're going to try to get some links on the KBOO website to some of these things by the end of today. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on KBOO.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. Send it to your frickin' banker, dog. Anyway, I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Happy New Year, and thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Paul Rowland, Idle No More, Political Perspectives. Thank you.